Welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today is Monday, October 14th, 2013, and you're listening to episode 72. What's the next thing that I'm supposed to say? My name is Rob. That's Jason. I remembered.
Everyone's so proud of you for remembering that.
I mean, hope so. Yeah. I'm proud of me. I'm actually very ashamed of myself.
You're actually not wearing your headphones. I think that's what threw you off.
It is. It's weird because we're continuing to have audio problems here, so hopefully we still sound okay, guys.
Yeah. So I know we've sounded okay the last couple times we've used this other recording system. Still our same good mics. We're just plugged into our portable recorder, but it's XLR and it's all fancy, so...
Hopefully it's okay.
Yeah, we just can't hear ourselves.
Right.
So...
It's weird. It's weird. I'm used to hearing my own voice through headphones, not just through my regular ears while recording. While doing my announcer voice in the beginning of the show, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, hey, it's been a while since GrandCon.
Oh, man, it sure has. It's been a while since we just sat down and recorded a show with the two of us, because our last two episodes were interviews that we did with the gentleman from Sparks Games and the guys from Split Second Games.
Right. I mean, they were more guest host episodes than interviews, but...
Yeah.
It's still not just you and I, hanging out, jib-jabbing.
We don't usually back up guest shows on top of each other like that, but it was a good opportunity to talk to both those guys in a short period of time.
Right.
I should say all of those guys.
Yeah.
Both of those groups and
yeah, five of them total.
Yeah. Hopefully you guys enjoyed those shows. But yeah, but it means that it's been a long time since you and I sat down together and talked about what's been going on with us.
Yeah, which is what everybody wants to know about.
Yeah. Well, it's a documentary podcast, right? Isn't that kind of the point?
It is kind of, yeah.
We're supposed to focus on ourselves.
Right. We talked a little bit about Grand Con.
We did.
But, you know, just kind of off the cuff when they asked us what we've been playing. But Grand Con was a really good time.
Yeah.
I would say that you would not have known that was a first-year con.
I would have thought
it was just a smaller con that had been going for a few years because it ran really smoothly.
Right.
I don't know how many people they had. I heard at one point on day one, like 3 hours into it, somebody say they already have more people than Mark and Brian expected.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That is super great.
Yeah.
No, everybody was good. We got to hang out with some people. We got to talk to the guys from Greater Than Games, who we're huge fans of, as you guys know.
Mm-hmm.
And they're awesome guys in person.
Yep.
And we also got to talk to other people from Passport Games. They were really nice. Mm-hmm. Got to have dinner with and hang out extensively with the Happy Mitten people.
Yep.
They were good people to hang out with. We've talked to them many times before, just haven't actually been able to hang out in person all together. We met Jeff at Gen Con, and we met Kyle previous to that at the game night we went to in Grand Rapids for the Grand Con people.
Right.
Yeah, and we also, we met so many people. We got to hang out with Jason Gutarski, who we always love hanging out with.
Yep, it's good.
He hung out at our table for a while. Yeah, it was good times. Yeah,
man, Grand Con was so much fun. I mean, it was more fun than I expected it to be, honestly.
Yep, and you know, I would say the one flaw with Grand Con was our decision to not just stay the night.
Yeah, that was the bad part, that we didn't just stay up there on Saturday night.
Because we ended up having to kind of bow out around 11:30 or so.
It was closer to a little after midnight,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah, was it? We had to bow out from playing any more games, and we would have loved to stay up. We were playing with the Happy Mitten guys, trying some of their stuff, trying some of our stuff, and it was good times. And we wished we could have stayed longer to do that more.
Yeah. We had an hour drive to get home. So.
Next year we know better.
Yeah, next year. And boy, we are definitely sold on next year.
We will be there.
Yeah.
If you didn't go this year because you thought, oh, it's a small con, go. As long as you've got a way to get there, if you're within, you know, if you're within any sort of driving distance of several hours, you know, we sit on the last episode, we gave a hard time to the guys from Split Second because they're in Chicago and we're totally worth it for you guys to go.
Yeah. Yeah, I was thrilled because I think... For me, as a designer, Grand Con was more successful and more productive for me than Gen Con was.
Yeah.
Because I got way more playtesting done. And I was focusing on Maelstrom.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I had Frankenstein there with me, and I had Rock Wreckers with me. I even brought Damsels in Distress with me. And I brought the Troll Cakes game, Troll House Bakery.
Well, you actually built the game while we were
there. That's right. I did my initial prototype with Sharpies on the back of poker cards. Yeah. But I got so many playtests of Maelstrom in, and it was fantastic.
A lot.
Way, way more productive than any progress that was made at Gen Con. Got to talk to more people and meet more people and just play more games, which was fantastic.
We should also mention, if you haven't listened to the panel discussion that we had. It was another game designers panel. It was very different than the first one. A lot of different advice because we had different people. The only people that were on from before were you and I, who we don't say much on those because we like to let the pros talk. Katarski was there again. And he's great. He always has good advice. And he still managed to give different advice than last time. So that was cool. Jeremiah Lee was there with us, and he was super great on the panel. And then also Matt Riddle and Ben Pinchback from the guys who designed Fleet.
Yep.
So they were good guys, and you know, they all had very different advice from each other, and also different advice from what we heard before. And that's what we're all about, is trying to get more of those opinions in there.
Many perspectives as possible.
Because even, say, if somebody, you know, tells you to do something a certain way, you don't necessarily agree 100%, I guarantee there's insight there. You know, these are people that are published, that have published themselves sometimes, like Jeremiah has, or that have been published by others. And I mean, Jeremiah has as well.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just great to hear their different thoughts on stuff. Yeah. So they were, it was exciting to hang out with those guys. We'd never actually met Jeremiah in person. We've had him on the show, which is a great episode. Go back and listen to it. It's a long time ago, but
yeah, it was last year sometime.
Yeah. And it was just a straight up interview show, but it was, he had a lot of good insights.
Yeah, he sure did.
So he's been around the block a few times, so to speak, with the games.
Yeah, yeah, he has a lot of good perspective on a lot of the industry from both sides.
And speaking
of
playtesting, I got actually a lot of playtesting done on Sandbox Showdown.
Yeah, which wasn't even your plan.
No, I just had it set out because it was my nicest looking prototype. And every time somebody would ask to play, I would always try to direct them towards Maelstrom because that game needed more feedback because it was fresher.
Yeah, yeah.
And I also really enjoyed playing Maelstrom, so I was like, hey, I'll play too. So that was fun. But no, I had several takers on Sandbox, even though it was a slightly longer game. It was only two players. And I think every game I ended up playing against somebody, because it was only one person at a time, lots of really new feedback on it that was really, really useful.
Great.
The other thing I got to do there was get one test in of Transylvania, Transylvania Trading Company, which unfortunately you didn't get to try. But I was able to cut after the first test. I was happy with how it went. It showed me that there's a real good game in there, but it wasn't quite there yet, which is the first prototype, right? I mean, it's not going to be great. But it was fun, and that was cool, and people really liked the mechanics. There just was too many cards.
Yeah.
So I was able to cut 70 plus cards out of the...
Holy cow!
Well, you know me. I figure high cards.
Yeah, you do.
Because you want to be safe, right? But man, I was super happy with the feedback, and I'm super happy with the kind of the slimmed down version that'll have all the same features of the bigger game.
Yeah.
But will be, you know, simpler to play. Yeah, so... Pretty excited to get more tests in of that. So
excellent.
Hopefully you and I get to play it in the near future, and we'll do a recording of that.
Yeah, I still haven't had a chance yet. So. I'm looking forward to that. Yeah, also that night when we were there, while you guys were playing Transylvania, I got to play test Odd Socks by...
That looked like a lot of fun.
By John, I want to say his name, last name is Dubois, but it might be Dubois.
Yeah. I think so, yeah.
I think it's Dubois. Anyway,
it's spelled Dubois, but I think it's pronounced Dubois.
John Dubois. Anyway, Odd Socks. John, I don't know if you listen to the show or if you're out there. I'm still thinking about that game and still talking to people about that game. That was super, super mega fun. And I wish you the best of luck with it, man. It was fantastic.
It looked like fun. It was one of those games where as I was playing, I think we're playing my game, actually. I saw you guys over there playing, and I was like, that looks like fun, you know?
Yeah.
So, and then we got together, and we played a game with the Happy Mitten people that they had brought that was a lot of fun. So
I'm not sure if we're really allowed to talk about that.
I don't think so in detail, but
yeah.
They've got good stuff with them, you know, that they're testing out. So that was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Good stuff there. So apart from Grand Con... what you've been playing lately?
Oh, the big thing I've been playing a lot of is Love Letter.
Yeah.
So, here's the thing about Love Letter, right? I was kind of turned off from it to begin with because so many people were, Love Letter, oh god, it's so good, it's this amazing game, it just breaks the rules, and it's a micro game, and there's 18 cards, and oh, blah, 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 16 cards, actually. And I was like, whatever. And then I finally see it, and it's like $9.
Eight.
Like, it was $8, was it?
Yeah, it was $8.
There was that awesome, we should give a shout out to that, I don't remember the name of the place.
Out of the Box.
Out of the Box Games. It's in Zealand, actually.
It's in Zealand, okay,
it's actually right across the street from where we filmed Coffee Shop Kings, the movie we made back in 2008.
Yeah. Right on.
Yeah, they're in the Dance Place studio.
Cool.
Yeah.
So Out of the Box.
Yeah.
Great game. Those guys had a great show there. Great showing there.
And they had everything discounted at 20%.
Yeah.
So yeah, Love Letter was only $8, and I thought, you know what, everybody says it's awesome, I'm just going to get it. And it's awesome.
Yeah, you bought it, you brought it back to the table, and you kind of dropped it down there and you said about Love Letter, and I sneered because I think all the same stuff. I was thinking all the same stuff that you were thinking. Like, oh God, people just won't shut up about this game, and we both have that same bias, and shame on us for that.
Yeah,
because,
definitely.
Because we started playing the game, we played one round of it, because the game is played multiple rounds. First person to get 5 points is the winner. We played one round of it, and then somebody came up to the table, and we stopped to talk to them, so we stopped playing. And as soon as that we were done talking to that person, they walked away, I got up and went and bought my own copy.
Yeah, it was so good!
Yeah.
We've since played it together again in a three-player game.
And I've played a four-player game, too.
Oh, okay, cool. And it was...
Oh, it's great!
It's so fun.
It's great. I think it's best with four.
Yep.
I mean, two and three still works really well, but... Man, that four-player game that we had going was... Because it just brought out so much more strategy. It was a little less luck, a little less excitement, or a little less randomness, you know?
Right.
You could kind of look at what everybody else had on the table, what had been played, what kind of decisions had been made, and there was a lot more deduction that you could do.
Yep. A neat thing they had, too, was they had those little cards put in there, the little helper cards,
mm-hmm.
where it lists every character and yep. what their ability is and what their point value and how many there are in the deck.
Yeah.
Oh, it was
really
great. So it makes counting cards, if you want to play that way, really mm-hmm. easy.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's a good game.
Yeah. But the whole game is 16 playing cards, you know, cards with characters on them, and then like maybe 10 cubes, something like that.
I think it's like 15 or 20 cubes.
Okay.
Yeah. But at any rate, yeah.
Yeah, still counts as a micro game.
Yeah.
But it was a lot of fun. I also mm-hmm. picked up Attraction while I was there, mm-hmm. which I haven't played yet.
Mm-hmm.
It's a game it's just like 25 or something rare earth magnets,
mm-hmm.
and you spread them all over the table, and then you take turns shooting magnets into them, and when they combine, whoosh, and you're like smack into each other, you win that set, and you take them off.
Yeah.
And it's just a game of trying to run out. So
sounds good.
But it's pretty sweet, yeah. Mm-hmm. I haven't got to try it yet, like I said, but I'm really itching to, because it looks like a lot of fun.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, I've got a pile of those rare earth magnets just, you know, on a table in our library here at home, that just because they're fun to play with sometimes. And, right. and every now and then I've kind of picked them up and thought, I wonder if there's anything I could do with those. But then I just put them back down again because I'm not right. really thinking about it.
There was.
But it turns out there was something really smart you could do with that, yeah. So... Shame on me for not seeing their potential.
It was interesting to me, though, because that game was actually was pretty cheap.
Mm-hmm.
And those magnets are not cheap, so I was just a little surprised by that. I want to say the game was $15.
Oh, wow.
You know
that
what I mean?
Cheap.
Those are big magnets.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it came with, like, a cloth bag, which I'm sure didn't cost much, but, I mean, there was a cost to it. So, and then, like, the paper rules.
There's something... I knew a guy who used to travel to China a lot on business... And he used to buy those magnets in China because they were cheaper than they are in the U.S. And there was some kind of an import law or something, or a customs law, where you were only allowed to bring a certain number, or like maybe 1 pound or less of these magnets over with you because of some kind of laws like that. I don't remember the details of it, but I remember right. him saying something. He might have been lying to me about it. I don't know. But I remember him saying
that,
something about that.
I could especially see that as like a Chinese law because they want to charge tariffs on that.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, those rare earth magnets are...
But I remember him saying that every time he would come back from China, he would buy the maximum number that he was allowed every time. I don't remember why he was doing that. He might have just been a guy who really liked magnets. But anyway. Yeah.
So have you been playing anything different beyond that?
Yeah, I've been pretty busy, actually. Gosh. So Love Letter, yeah, was fantastic. We went back up to Grand Rapids the following weekend, Christine and I, after Grand Con, to see some friends. We wanted to go to Art Prize, which, for anybody out there who doesn't know, I think it's the biggest public art event in the world. Every year, Grand Rapids, for about a month, is just taken over by public art installations, and it's all free.
Yep.
And it was neat. But there were way too many people, so we just eventually kind of got sick of it and gave up and went to a bookstore and played some games. So we played Love Letter, the four-player Love Letter, and that was excellent. And we played Dominion, and I haven't played a four-player game of Dominion in a while, because I usually just play with Christine. And I don't think I've ever played a game of Dominion with two other people who are as comfortable and familiar with it as we are.
Okay, yeah.
If maybe even more familiar and more comfortable with it than
we
are.
Because
they were going, they, like it was my turn, and then snap a finger, and it was back around to me again. I'm not used to it playing that fast, because when Christine and I play, we talk out every turn. You know, it's okay, I'm going to put that, and I'm going to take that, and then I have three to spend, and I'm going to take that, and I'm done. And that's just kind of the, we don't do that on purpose, it's just kind of the etiquette that naturally evolved with us playing. But these two, they were hardcore. They would go slap, 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 and be done with their turn, not even tell me what's happening. If I'm not watching, I don't have a chance. And it was really, it was exciting and kind of exhilarating again to play the game with people who know it.
Right.
You know? And it made it more exciting than it's been in for a while, since the first time I played it, really. So I'm glad to see the Dominion is still fun. And we were still just playing with the base set. I've still never played with anything other than the base set.
Forget an expansion. Oh, you know what? You've only played with the core cards.
Excuse me. I guess there were two cards that were swapped in, but I can't remember what they were now. Okay. But it was still almost 100% the base set.
There's some real gems in the main game, though.
Yeah.
That you can swap out for some crappier cards in the base set.
Yeah.
We've done that before.
Yeah. And we did a play test. I've done several play tests now, actually, of Troll Cakes. I'm still calling it Troll Cakes. I really want to call it Troll House Cookies or Troll House Bakery, but I'm not sure if I can get away with that.
Yeah.
You know? But anyway, I've gotten several playtests of that in, and I'm really happy with where that's going right now. So my plan is to enter that into the GameCrafter contest that's up right now. It's good. It opened, I think, through sometime in mid-November for a mini or micro game contest.
Yep.
And it's not as micro gamey as Love Letter is, but I think their goal is for it to be sellable on GameCrafter for under $12,
yep,
and for everything to fit into a tuck box, including rules, which is a cool challenge. Yep. So I think I can make Troll Cakes fit with that.
I mean, I don't see why not.
Yeah. And then last week had a game night with a friend of ours, and we played Quicksilver, which was it was the first time I'd played a three-player game, because up to now I'd only actually had a chance to play a two-player with Christine.
Right.
And we played three-player, and it was fun, and it was definitely a little more crowded, and it was definitely a better game with more people, I think. Two-player, you're always going to be attacking each other, you know, but once you get a third person in there, there's some strategy to that. And that was nice. We suffered from that same thing that you and I have talked about before, though, where the person teaching the game soaks up all the damage, you know?
Right.
So Christina and our friend, they were both attacking me and not attacking each other until it was clear that I was out of the game.
Right.
Yeah. And that was one thing that actually did frustrate me a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's something... Well, let me tell you what happened. Okay.
Sure.
In Quicksilver, it's kind of on a basic level, it is a roll and move game, and it's a racing game, so lots of racing games are that way.
Of course,
you
know? Yeah.
You roll your dice, and you choose which direction you're going to be traveling, and you move a number of spaces according to the die roll, and then you also have a hand of cards, and the game allows you to, every card has a number value on it, and so the game allows you to discard a card to add or subtract that value from your total distance.
Okay.
All right. But only one card per turn. Now, we could house rule that and allow two or three or however many we want, of course, you know, but we choose not to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I generally like to follow the rules of games unless it's a game I've played a million times.
Right.
You know? And so early in the game, I got really, really awful rolls, and I had nothing but one cards in my hand. Mm-hmm. Everything worth one. And so with terrible rolls and terrible cards to add to those rolls,
and everyone shooting at you
and everyone shooting at me and slowing me down, for about the first five, maybe six turns, I was going two spaces or three spaces.
Oh wow.
And it was awful, and there was nothing I could do at that point. The game was over for me.
Right.
And that was for the first third of the game. That the middle third, I was just that far behind, there's nothing I could do about it. And the last third of the game, man, I had some amazing rolls that I could chain together with some really awesome card combos.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of stuff is possible, but still, there was no hope of me catching up. None at all.
Right.
Because the girls, they were just getting average stuff. Neither one of them was performing spectacularly and getting, you know, serendipitous amazing rolls. They were just having an average game. I was just having I had a really, really awful early game, and that it just ruined it for me. And that was a real bummer.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be.
But I mean, that's just going to happen in any kind of game that relies so much on dice, rolling dice and random cards. And so, I thought maybe we could roll that into our feature of the week here, that this whole the subject of randomness and how randomness can hurt you.
Kind of like mitigating that. And yeah.
Yeah. Right.
You know, that's that's a good example. You know, I think we've all had that happen in games. And to be clear, that's not, it's interesting, right? Because your first thought is, well, that's a fault of the game, right? I mean, because, you know. Because
I'm losing and I'm angry.
Well, you're, because, you know what I mean? My... you were put in a situation by randomness
yeah.
that was impossible, according to the rules, for you to mitigate, right?
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's the bad thing about randomness. But I could also tell you that I've had the same thing happen to me in Settlers of Catan.
Sure.
One of the greatest Euros ever. You pick, in Settlers of Catan, you pick numbers based on probability, right? You want fives, you know, especially six, eight, and nines. Those are the core numbers, right? Those are the numbers the most probability to come up. Seven's also in there, but seven's the Baron, so that's not good. And I've had games where I pick six, eights, and nines. That's what I've got. I mean, I've got a nice spread of those core numbers, and twos, threes, and 12s get rolled the entire game, and you lose. And you're like, well, wait a minute. I mean, this is a Euro game. This shouldn't happen, right?
Yeah.
But it does happen, and you can do some tricksy stuff, and you can try and trade, but the fact of the matter is, if you don't have any resources, mm-hmm. there's nothing to trade.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, they actually tried to mitigate that more in the Settlers of America, which isn't a great game, but... what's cool about it is if you don't get any resources, I think you get gold, like, which is something you can buy resources with. So you're never going to get completely just kind of dice humped, as they say.
Yeah.
Which is great. Yeah. So I guess when I get that story out there too, that, you know, it doesn't necessarily make a game bad. It just,
sure. No, it's,
I mean,
something that you should be aware of.
Right.
You know, and with Quicksilver, I mean, I don't mean to bash on Quicksilver at all, because I still really like the game.
Right. Yeah, it's a super fun game. Right,
and I really like that it takes racing, the racing is boiled down to some very, very simple role, simple movements, simple decision making. You only have three, if this was Formula D, we'd be talking about gears, so I guess let's call them three speeds that you're, right. you can go. You have a very limited amount of damage you can take, and there's, by boiling it down to those simple decisions, those simple options, it makes the gameplay a lot faster.
Right.
Right. Now, the drawback of that, though, is that you can get dice humped if you're just right. really unlucky.
So, were you going
to... Well, no, I was just going to keep thinking then that, you know, Formula D... that's less likely to happen because there's so many more gears that you can be in. Instead of having three gears, you can have five gears. You have a whole lot more damage you can take, so you have a lot more flexibility with making decisions to push your car harder and take damage for that, because you can soak up more damage. But also, if you're in second gear, you have a minimum move that's very, very short. But if you're in fourth gear, your minimum move is still pretty far, because you're going fast anyway.
Right.
You know? So... by adding more complexity, I guess what I'm getting to is, it feels to me like if you're going to try and cut out some of the danger of that randomness, you have to add more complexity in other ways. And that's something that Stone Age does. Stone Age is very susceptible to bad die rolls, but there's so much other complexity in that game that having a bad string of die rolls is not necessarily going to lose the game for you.
Right. I mean, yeah, if you are consistently rolling all ones on food, that might eventually screw you. Well, actually, it will, in fact, eventually screw you. But
you could just get a whole bunch of tools. If you can focus on getting a bunch of tools and
Put yourself on the grain generator so that every turn, you know. So there are ways to mitigate that. I guess when you're designing a game, when you're publishing a game, at what point do you need to mind that balance? You know, for instance, with a game like Quicksilver, right? Or even a game like Settlers, if probability says that 9 out of 10 games, what happened to you will not happen.
Mm-hmm.
Is that good enough? I mean, I think it is, but I think the one problem is, luckily you love this game, you know, and you've played this game, and I love this game. But what happens if that was your first time? Now, as a designer and somebody who really loves games, I think you'd be smart enough to say, you look through the cards and say, okay, this shouldn't be happening to me. This mm-hmm. is really, really bad luck.
Yeah.
But... you know, that said,
Not
you
every
also
player.
Might just be like, screw this game, it's stupid.
Yeah, not every player is as patient and understanding of that stuff as I am.
I mean, I feel like in a game like that, here's a simple fix for what happened to you in Quicksilver. How many cards do you have in your hand? I can't remember.
Max of five.
So let's say you have five cards, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're allowed to discard all of the cards in your hand to draw one less. So if I have five cards in my hand, I discard, I draw the next four cards. I could keep doing that, right?
Okay.
It's not going to help me because I'm going to keep losing cards, but mm-hmm. if I'm just drawing ones, you know, and the kind of the way I thought about that is what they say is ace no face or farmer's hand in Euchre. Oh, you don't know how to play Euchre.
I hate Euchre.
It's the idea that, like, I have a bunch of crappy cards. Yeah. I can show you that I have no crappy cards. I can put them down and I can draw other cards.
Mm.
Now, a lot of people don't play Euchre that way because it's actually a crappy way to play, but...
Okay.
or is it not Euchre?
I don't know.
I don't remember. There's some card where you can do that. I don't remember what it is. Maybe it is Euchre, but anyways, whatevs. That was kind of my inspiration for that.
Yeah, sure. Little options like that could be added in there. You know, and I actually come to think of it in the rule book. I don't have the box here right here in front of me, but I think in the rule book there's like an extra page or portion of a page devoted to optional rules. Because the main game says that if your armor drops to zero, you lose a turn and, you know, then you repair one and then the next turn you get back into it. But you could alternatively play with player elimination. Then if you die, you die, you're out.
Right.
You know, and so
you
I think
stop and repair, you're right. Crashing.
I think there are some other alternate rules in there that I didn't read through. So maybe there's some other options in there that already address that concern.
Right. And again, we're not trying to bash the game.
No, it's a great game.
We're trying to talk about. At what point do you need to mitigate that? So in that game, they may have already mitigated that. They may actually have the suggestion I just made in there. Because I'll be honest, I haven't read the optional rules either.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even realize there were optional rules. My bad. So, yeah. So I guess...
Well, so let's say Maelstrom... was not a set movement. What if you had to roll a die in order to move? And if you got a minimum, if you didn't get a minimum of three on your movement roll, you slide inward. And you get to that innermost ring, and you only roll a two. And I didn't get a three, I only got a two, which means I fall into the center of the maelstrom. Now, the game doesn't work that way, because that would be crappy.
That would be terrible. It'd
be terrible.
Because the punishment is death.
Right.
In a game like Quicksilver or Settlers, the punishment is... not doing as well as you could do.
Yeah.
Or not doing as well as the other players, you know, falling behind either by not being able to mm-hmm. build enough stuff or not being able to race fast enough.
Mm-hmm.
Same with Formula D. I mean, even though there's more options, you know, that still could happen.
Okay. Yeah, so that's a bad example. Okay, here's what I'm thinking. People talk about rubber banding in racing games on computers and video game consoles. Are you familiar with that idea?
Mm-mm.
Okay. Well, I'll explain it in a nutshell. Basically, when are racing games fun on video games?
When you can win.
Well, but at what stage in that race? When is that the most fun? From your point of view.
Like when I'm playing racing game.
When you're playing a racing game with your controller, your video game, I don't know what racing games you've played. You're playing Mario Kart.
Okay.
When is Mario Kart the most fun?
When I have a red shell.
Okay.
And I'm in first place. I think that's what you're trying to get at.
Well, sure, but what are you going to do? Why do you want that red shell?
To take out my opponent.
Exactly. Okay. When you're interacting with other drivers. That's when a racing game is at its best.
Right.
When you are interacting with other cars, other vehicles on the road, okay?
Right.
A lot of racing games, though, if you're good at it, you're going to pull ahead. And you might pull ahead halfway through the race, and then the fun part's over, and you just have to hold on the gas and steer till it ends.
Right.
And for a lot of people, depending on the kind of racing game person you are, depending on what kind of racing game you're playing, if you're playing a NASCAR game or an IndyCar game, I should say F1 game, because I think F1 is more correct than Indy. If you're playing one of those kinds of games, then that's probably what your goal is. You want to stay ahead and never have anybody pass you. But if you're playing Burnout, you want to be in the fray. You know?
Right.
And so games like that, and Mario Kart is notorious for this, is rubber banding AI. Okay? So that when you get ahead, all of a sudden the AI gets way better so they can catch up with you. And sometimes the AI gets better. Sometimes the computer just artificially accelerates their cars. Sometimes, depending on how crappy the game is, sometimes the cars will just straight up teleport. Like, Burnout will literally spawn in new cars to get in your way. Old games like Cruising USA, old Sega stuff, they would just literally spawn in new cars in front of you to give you things to dodge.
Even though you were still in first.
Right. They would just, the other things would pop up, right?
Right.
Okay, so that's something that some video games do, the rubber banding, to keep you in the action, to keep you having fun. Because from the point of view of the game designers, they want you to be experiencing the most exciting part of that game through your entire race.
Well, another thing Mario Kart, for instance, does is they make some of the opponents in an 8-player game, which is a standard game with AI, like the last three will be terrible, and you're going to lap them if you're any good.
Oh, sure.
In third place, you will likely lap them. So there's always people, and that's a good solution as compared to like a cruise in USA.
So they build that into the game. So let's think about this in terms of a board game. And it doesn't have to be a racing game. It could really be any kind of game. What are the positives and negatives then of building rubber banding into your board game? I mean, you want everybody who's playing your game to be having fun the entire time. You know?
Right.
But you also want to, depending on the kind of game, you probably want to reward the skilled players who are thinking strategically and importantly.
Well, I would argue that Quicksilver has that somewhat. Because when you're in last place, you get the bonus.
It was at that moment that Jason and I got into a very heated argument. Because I had just read the Quicksilver rulebook less than a week ago. In what I thought was great detail. But Jason, so we stopped and we cut, and I ran downstairs and got the rule book. And Jason, will you please read what you found?
So yes, in regards to a catch-up mechanic that's been installed in this game, under checkpoints, the last paragraph says, the first player to cross a checkpoint fires up the spirits of their competitors. All other players draw cards up to their maximum hand size. So!
That would have helped.
Yeah.
If I had read that.
Yeah, it would have.
That would have helped me a lot.
Because you would have wanted to be spending as many cards as possible so that you could have... So, yeah.
All right.
So, there's a good way
so I would...
to... there's a really good way to use a catch-up mechanic in a game. And it's funny because as Rob was talking, like it's been a little while since I played this.
Yeah.
But I specifically remember there being a catch-up mechanic, and I was just slowly kind of iterating in my head, and finally it was like, wait a minute, no, there's a catch-up mechanic, and then Rob was like, and then we're like, and then, yeah, so now you found us here. So anyways, good news.
So good news. So now I'll actually remember that next time we play Quicksilver, and hopefully I won't get left in the dust. And so all of my frustration was all for naught, I apologize.
And what's actually really funny about the whole thing is... what's really funny about the whole thing is that you'll probably never have another game like that.
Right? You're right. I may not.
I mean,
I may not.
Speaking strictly statistically, as they say, that game was probably one in 1,000.
It may have
been. Though, I have to be honest, let's take a little realistic break here. You know, Rob, I've played a lot of games with you over the years with a lot of dice rolling, and you kind of suck at rolling dice.
I have bad luck.
We used to play D&D together, and that's a 20-sided die, and I've seen you roll more 1s, 2s, and 3s than I think I've ever seen anyone else roll.
So here's the thing.
Ever.
A lot of people say that I suck at rolling dice. I say that I'm unlucky when rolling dice, because there's no skill involved in rolling dice.
False.
You drop the thing, and it bounces, and you get a result.
False.
Absolutely true.
There's technique. There's risk technique to rolling.
You like to imagine that there is technique, but there is not.
I will say, can I tell a little aside story that I think is kind of funny?
It's what we do here.
all right, so this has nothing to do with skill. In fact, I lost quite terribly this. So I'm sure some people are familiar with the game Bunko. Have you heard of Bunko?
Yeah.
So it's like this dice game somebody came up with. It's been adopted by a lot of like groups of people that play, but specifically for some reason it's been adopted by like church nights for some reason. I don't understand why. But once a year our church has a Bunko night. I don't understand why, but we do. And the first night I'm sitting with these old ladies. Could you like rotate? So the idea of Bunko is
old ladies like to say Bunko.
Right, that could be, yeah.
Maybe they just like to say, Bunko!
And I'm not going to explain Bunko, except for to say it's a very simple dice rolling game that involves rolling D6s, which I kept saying D6s, and I kept getting funny looks because most people just say dice because general population, especially old ladies, it's dice, right?
Dice.
So
there is no other die.
They're watching me roll, and they do the Vegas shake in the drop. But the way I roll is I roll with my hand and then I do this little twist with my wrist.
Right. You let it roll off your hand. You don't drop it. You let it kind of roll gracefully off your fingers.
That's how we do, man. Right. That's how I learned to roll D20s. Yeah. So they kept commenting. I went through moving through tables, probably four or five sets of old ladies. There were younger people there too, but the old ladies were always the ones who'd be like, why do you roll like that? But at the time I was rolling well, so then they were trying to imitate the style as if that was making me roll well. Yeah. So I'm just saying, old ladies, they like my style when it comes to rolling.
They see me rolling.
And you know, I have to be honest, Bunko is not that fun. To me, it's slightly more fun than playing Sequence, which I've talked about how I get stuck playing Sequence all the time and I really just hate Sequence.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, I just had a quick idea.
Okay. Go.
What if for people familiar with Sequence, what if it was an assassination game? There are a bunch of targets on the board, and the cards you draw were the possible targets you could take out, and you had to lay it on there to match it to take them out. And there were different payouts for them. So there was actually a reason to be playing on them other than trying to make a line. I like that. I don't really like the assassination thing because it's a little bit overdone, but I bet I could think of a better thing to do with that. All right. Filed. Good. I've said it out loud so I can always come back and listen to the show if I forget.
Good. All right. Anyway, I'm not sure where we kind of have bounced around here with topics.
Well, I think for poor luck mitigation.
Yeah.
There needs to be something in there.
Yeah.
Quicksilver's obviously done it. You know, Catan, I would argue, in the original Catan, there is no poor luck mitigation. If you roll crappy throughout the entire game,
sucks to be you.
You're just going to lose.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, with Catan, there's so much dice rolling. Every round, four pairs of dice are rolled.
Oh, okay.
Because each person takes a turn rolling two dice. So, statistically speaking, you shouldn't get hosed. But I have before, and it's not fun. So, another reason why we play partners, because there's a way to mitigate that. Because the chance that you and your partner both get hosed... Mm-hmm. Pretty much impossible, especially if you and your partner are smart enough to build on different numbers. So, I think as a game designer, you need to do it.
Yeah.
There's still going to be that 1,001 game. And who knows, even with that rule, the Quicksilver rule, you would have done better, I'm sure.
I would have done a lot better, actually, because that would have been, that would not have just happened on the first checkpoint. That would have happened on all three checkpoints.
Yeah,
because you were always the last. Would have had a chance.
You had those good moves where you were catching up.
Right.
So with those, combined with that...
It would have made a huge difference. Yeah. Yeah, okay.
But I'm just saying, even if it hadn't, they've done their job by having a catch-up mechanic.
Right.
Or, kind of a luck mitigation mechanic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, you're right. They have done their jobs. I'm sorry, guys. Paul and Randy, I'm sorry. I should have read your rules more closely. That's my fault. My fault. I still love your game.
What's funny is this actually, like I said, I'm just so glad this happened on a game that you already love.
Yeah.
You
know what I mean? Right.
Because when I've played Catan and that's happened to me, I haven't been I don't want to play this game ever again. I mean, at that time, I was like, I'm not going to play this for a while.
Oh, this game stinks.
And then, the next week we're playing it again and I'm having a good time.
Yeah.
And I think fundamentally with a racing game...
Mm-hmm.
The stakes are a little higher, right? Because you want to be in it, you want to be in it, and especially with a game Quicksilver, where, as they talked about when they're on our show, the thing that they found that made it better than Formula D, other than everything, is, of course, the player interaction.
Yeah.
Like you said, Formula D, there is no interaction. The best interaction you might get is drafting, or maybe you can block someone.
Yeah.
But in a game like this, there's as much interaction as you want.
Yeah.
As a player, you can just ignore everyone and try and get ahead, or you can just try and gunfight it out.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that interaction is what makes it so much better, and also what makes you really get annoyed when you're way behind.
Yeah.
Because that interaction goes away.
Right. It's true.
At least some of that interaction goes away.
Yeah. Anyway, enough about that. Have a game to pitch.
I'm going to pitch a game.
Do that.
So,
now it's time for practicing the pitch with Jason Slingerland.
Hey!
Take it away, Jason.
Ho, ho. So, we talked earlier about Love Letter.
Yeah.
And Love Letter kind of, I hate to, it just feels so cliche, but it kind of changed my perspective. Again, because I thought so much ahead of time that I wasn't going to like the game. I'm actually surprised I bought it. only because I was so...
Having not even played it, yeah. I was surprised too.
Ingrained in the idea that it was like, stupid game. But it was $8, and everybody said it was good, so I was like, oh, I might as well find out. And it was also, I've heard, good with two players, and like you and I agree, that's a big thing for us. So after playing it, I kind of was like, this game is so dynamic. There's so much happening in this game with 16 cards and some cubes to mark stuff. And the cubes are really completely unnecessary. It's only because you're playing multiple rounds. They could have made one game just be the one round. I mean, I think that people would be upset by that only because sometimes you get just kind of luck knocked out of a round. Like, you know, I mean, you draw a card that you can't discard, and then somebody plays a card and says you have to discard it.
Yeah, I think requiring you to play in multiple rounds makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, component-wise, those could be anything, right? So I just got to thinking, and I was like, man, I would love to be able to design a micro game with that much depth. So I set off on that mission. and I designed a micro game. I'm sure it doesn't have that much depth, but I'm really happy with what I've got so far, and we've got to play it once. And so, all right. So I was looking for inspiration for a micro game because, you know, I needed to get a love letter out of my head. I didn't want to think about passing a note or doing anything that could be considered love letter. I wanted it to feel very different because I know there are other games like Council of Verona, which is not love letter, but has some striking similarities to love letter. And it's also a micro game. So, of course, comparisons are made.
Yeah, yeah.
So if I'm going to try and do a micro game, I don't want any comparisons other than that's a micro game like love letter. So we met this guy several years ago at a convention. We were sharing booths right next to him.
Yeah.
His name is Jake Ruth. He has a website called cubecrazy2.com.
Yeah.
He's an artist. He does awesome artwork. Mm-hmm. It's all vector-based artwork. Mm-hmm. What caught my eye, other than the fact that it was really awesome, was he had done a monster playing Catan. And he does all these monsters, but they're like silly for the most part. And I remembered back to that, and so I went and looked, and I sent him an email and said, hey dude, I want to make a prototype. I'd love to use your artwork in the prototype. You know, I'm not going to sell it, just would like to, you know, as inspiration, but I felt like I should ask because I knew the guy and we're friends on Facebook. And he was like, absolutely, you know, he wants to see a copy of it so he can try it. So I take these and I just start looking through, and I set my goal on 18 cards. It's an arbitrary number. I'm going to make 18 cards. That's the whole game. That's it. No markers. 18 cards. I can be better than love letter. False. But anyways, you know, I thought that, so I what I came up with was a game I'm calling the Monsters of Megad's Isle.
Monsters of Megad's Isle.
And Megad's is Megadz. Okay. So in the game, you are playing, the story goes, there are two brothers on Megad's Isle. And the brothers are both, by birthright, supposed to be king. Nobody can decide who it is. So every year, they have these big games, like these Olympic-style games. And the two brothers will pick monsters to play for them. And they will try and best the champions, the monsters that are already out there. And whoever wins the best patrons in this game, meaning the best monsters that will fight for them forever, they're king for a year. And, you know, every year, so they have this, right? So it's kind of silly. I wanted it to feel silly because the artwork is, I hate to use the term silly because it's amazing, but
it's whimsical.
That's the term.
It's whimsical.
I wanted it to be whimsical. Mm-hmm. What's life without whimsy?
It sucks.
Right. Interestingly enough, that quote, "What's life without whimsy?" is Sheldon Cooper. So said that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks.
That's all.
Yeah. Go on.
So the game, this is how you play the game. You are dealt out five cards. Each player is dealt five cards. And these cards are your challengers, right? In addition, three cards are laid face up in the center of the board. These cards are the champions. And then the rest of the cards, of the 18 cards, are pushed off to the side, face down. They're the spectators. So what should be noted is every card is a monster. There's no difference between the cards other than the fact that the monsters have different abilities, and they also have different values and names and blah, blah, blah on artwork. But the whole game is made up of these monsters. So they're all alike. Am I making that clear enough?
Mm-hmm, okay. Yeah.
So the goal of the game is to score 25 points in value via having patrons who are on your team officially. So like I said, that's each one has a value. So what you're going to do is you're going to have your five cards in your hand. You're going to take one of those patrons, I mean, one of those challengers in your hand, sorry, and you're going to look at them and say, I want to keep him. Now, whether or not it's based on his value, or he also has what's called a patron power. And that patron power gets used if he's your patron, which means if you win him and he gets to be your patron. So I pick him. I like this guy. I put him face down off to the side now. And now we're going to try and best the monsters in the center of the board. And at that point, it's kind of smash-up style. You're going to play back and forth to determine who's going to best these monsters. So the monsters on the board each have a value. And you need to try with the monsters you're laying down to beat that value. But in addition to beating that value, you have to be the highest person to beat that value. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So if it's a six and I lay a five and you lay a four, nobody wins it because it's not a six. So we do that for the whole round. We take turns playing back and forth. In the end, we figure out which challengers I bested. I mean, which champions I bested and which champions you bested. Mm-hmm. We add up their total values. Whoever has bested the most of them, the most point-wise, wins that round. And they get to pick up the challenger that they had put face down, and that is now their patron. They get that point value, and they get to use the patron power that's in there. Mm-hmm. Patron powers do a lot of different things. They might allow you to slightly adjust the hands. They might allow you to do other things, like maybe they add value. Maybe the patron's value is so good that it's going to penalize you mm-hmm. with other people, or it's going to give you an opponent. Like, there's one that's like, the values range between 1 and 13. The lowest values have the best powers. The highest values have the worst powers. The 12 actually gives 3 bonus value points to your opponent to try and help. And you're playing to 25. Okay, so issues with the game.
Mm-hmm.
You and I played it once.
Right.
My wife and I played it once. First issues we saw was, hey, funny that this should be on the same topic, is randomness.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What would happen sometimes is 3 monsters get put out, and no matter what happens, only one monster is going to matter. For instance, one of the values is a 9, the other one is a 3, the other one is a 4. So if I win the 4 and the 2, but not the 9, I don't win. So you can't bluff your opponent. You can't slow play them back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, everybody lays their cards down on the 9, and whoever wins
is the guy who had the most cards.
The guy who had the best cards. Now, you know that going into it. So you can look at those and say, all right, which challenger should I put down? Which one should I keep? But in effect, you can really get card humped, I guess, right?
Yeah.
So, it was statistically possible that it happened once in both games. Yeah. So, I mean, it happened more than once, actually, in our game.
Yeah.
So you and I sat down and said, okay, there's got to be a way to make this less random. So we went with the idea that if you lose, so if you win, you keep your patron. But if you lose, you get to draw a coin. There are 5 coins in the game. So yes, now I'm way not nearly as good as a love letter because I've added these coins. And the coins right now are just red poker chips, blank on one side. On the other side, they have this monster on them. And the monster is called a cornicorn, which if you go to the Cube Crazy 2 site, I strongly suggest you check it out. It is a piece of corn, an ear of corn. Yeah, corn cob. Yeah. Still in his husk halfway.
Right.
He's got a smiley face and stuff on him. Mm-hmm. And he has a unicorn horn coming out of him. Hence, corny corn.
Yep.
And it happens that Jake has made like 10 different ones of these. So I picked 5.
And they're
5.
Awesome.
Yeah, and they're all awesome. Every single one is awesome. Yeah. I picked 5 that I really liked. A standard one, one that's dressed like a geek, one that's dressed like a superhero, one that looks like a wizard, and one that looks like it's at a disco party. Every piece of corn on there is actually a different color, like it's a disco ball.
Mm-hmm.
So those all have special abilities that are strong. One can add a +5 to one of your challengers that you've put out. One of them, the disco one, lets you shuffle up all the cards in the center, and all the cards in the spectators, shuffle them all together, and then relay 3 cards back out as champions. But your cards that are placed stay put. So that can completely change the game. Other ones allow you to swap some of your people at the end. So the idea is, it's a self-balancing game now. If I lose, I get to take a coin. The coin is taken at random, so I don't know what I'm choosing, because some are better than others. I look at it, put it face down, and I can save it. I don't have to use it. I can only play 1 per turn, because otherwise I could wait like 4 turns and then just womp you on a turn. And I don't think that's cool. So that feels like that's going to balance the game. I haven't got to try it yet. But I'm pretty confident that will at least give it a pretty good balance. Only because, I mean, it just Mm-hmm. It should.
Yeah. Yeah. And we talked about that at lunch that day after we tried it. And I agree. I think that's... It's again, it's kind of rubber banding for the loser. You know, it's if you lose, well, sure, I didn't get that patron, but I got something else that's going to make it easier for me to get a patron next time, or right. more likely, or make it, if not make it easier for me, it's going to make it more difficult for you.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
Yep.
And if it's something like reshuffling and redealing new challengers, then it's pure randomness, but at least then it's equal for both of us.
Right. Yeah. Yep. Something else to that I want to mention with the game that I didn't was, so there's only 18 cards, which means when you start out, you have, I have five cards, you have five cards. There's three on the board. That's 13.
Yeah.
There are five spectators. After turn five, there's no more spectators. After turn six, we're losing cards now, which means that after turn six, we're only going to get dealt four cards. We're going to have to put one down, you know, so you always get dealt an even number. Nobody gets hosed with that. So the extra card always goes out. So yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's just kind of, you know, trying to make that, so that as the game wears on, the game's going to get harder. Mathematically, I don't see how you could lose more than a few. I mean,
yeah, it probably, I mean, is the game really going to take that long? I mean, how many rounds is it going to take till somebody has the 25 points?
I mean, if everybody shoots for low numbers to get better abilities, it could take a while.
Yeah. Okay.
But right. I mean, you know, mathematically speaking, eventually somebody's going to be like, all right, I could win if I take a 10 or better, and they're going to take a 10 or better, you know. Mm-hmm. But there are some that give you bonuses for not taking 10s or better, you know.
Yeah.
Like, there's one that's worth 9, but he won't let you have any other people above 10 because he's the alpha, so.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I'm happy with it. I think that it's a fun game. I think I'm going to pursue it a little more,
mm-hmm.
Just to try and, you know, play it out some more and see.
Yeah, what you should. And, yeah, I'd like to try it again.
Yeah, I'm going to send a copy to the artist,
yep.
so that he can give it a try and give some of his feedback and his thoughts, because he loves playing games as well.
Good.
Yeah. So yeah, so that's kind of the, yeah.
Cool. Yeah, I like it. Monsters of Miegad's Mountain
Isle. Monsters of Miegad's Isle.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I like it. It is appropriately different enough from Love Letter that it. I don't think people will associate the two, which is good.
No, yeah, yeah. I mean, I tried to really honor the artwork by giving yeah. things weird names and, you know,
mm-hmm.
just kind of being very whimsical about the whole mm-hmm. thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
yeah. Good. Cool. Well, we should move on
yeah.
because tonight is the big climactic moment here that we've been leading up to for many weeks. Tonight, we need to announce the winner of the great, fan name Kanzumi Goddess giveaway.
No longer will you guys be those guys and gals who listen to us.
Right.
You're going to have a name.
You're going to have a name. And by the end of this episode, you're going to know what the name is. And but before I read off the winner, I thought it might be fun to read off some of the, well, really all the other submissions that we got.
Yep.
And we got several duplicates, so we'll just read all the yep. individuals here.
And we went by the first person to
yeah,
send it, because the winning thing did have more than one submission.
Right. And many people suggested the winning name, which was actually good reinforcement for
yes.
for us to choose that
so
one.
So thank you for that.
Thank you.
But we went with the very first person. There was
first
a clear
one.
Winner who submitted days before anybody else.
Right. So let's start with some of the sillier ones here. Proto-snipers. Proto-snipers.
Proto-snipers. It sounds very violent.
It does. Yeah. Proto-snipers.
Yet somehow I like it.
Yeah, well, it's unique. Rookie Meeples was the next one.
Some days I feel like a rookie meeple.
Yeah. Fellow Meeple Builders. A little wordy.
It's a little wordy, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah.
You know? A little wordy there.
Maybe FMBs.
FMBs?
But see, then I get confused because people be like, what's FMB? Your show's BTG.
Right,
you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Build buds, you know, that's all right. Build buds, yeah. Builderlings. The next one here, J and R's Builders, because you're J and I'm R.
Yeah.
Again, actually kind of sounds like the name of a general contractor.
It actually does.
J and R Builders. BTG Gamesters. Well, I appreciate the incorporation of BTG in there. BTG Gamesters, but shouldn't it be BT Gamesters? Because the G is already game.
Oh, it could
know.
Be.
You know,
well, interestingly, though, as you point out, BTGers not submitted.
Not a single person.
Which I really expected to be submitted.
Yeah. Or BT Geniuses was the one that I'd come up with, but that felt too hard, too much to me.
Well, because then people would think the COD podcast was called Building the Genius or something.
Yeah. Anyway, proto gamers. Proto gamers.
I feel like we're like the original gamers.
Yeah, we're a pre-modern game. Proto.
If we were going to go with some of the gamesters, I would suggest original gamesters.
Original OG.
Oh, we're the OG. Original gamesters.
Gamineers.
Ah, yes, like Imagineers from Disney.
Gamineers, not bad, you know. We're getting up to some of the better ones here. Some honorable mentions for us. Scrapyard Cats. I mean,
yeah.
You know, that's kind of pandering to us, but I appreciate it.
Yeah. We're not above that.
Right, no. Jareds.
Yes, Jareds.
Which was a good one.
That's a good one.
That's funny. We could all just be Jareds.
I remember when I got that email and I read it to you, we both laughed out loud.
Yeah.
And if you don't know what Jareds are, go back and listen to our second
roundtable
discussion. Yeah. It refers to our friend Mikey Jones.
Yeah. One of our absolute favorites is from Nate Darty, Slingerlanders and Couchheads.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think
that's a fun one.
I think going forward, you know, we may need to develop a sort of team system like Team Slingerlander and Team Couchhead.
Yeah.
You know, that's something to remember.
Right. We need t-shirts.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
I think this was a real close one. We didn't choose this one though, because the contest was mainly, the suggestion was co-opters.
Yes.
That's a good one. But the contest was for fans of the podcast, not of the BTG co-op.
Right.
So I mean, a noble effort. I really like that one a lot.
And I think we'll probably end up using that one on the co-op
site. Very well may. Yeah. So thank you. And that was from Tim D.
Yes.
But the winner above all else had the most submissions, and the first suggestion was from Mr. Gray Dietrich.
I think it's Dietrich.
He's a local boy. I think he's from Grand Rapids.
Yep.
And we met him at Grand Con this year. But the winning choice here is Builders.
Yes.
Yes.
It's simple.
It's clean.
It says what it is. It's clean. You know,
it's what this is about. You know, it's about building something, building the game. So congratulations, Gray. You have won our copy, only slightly used. Our copy of Kanzumi Goddess. We thank you, sir, for listening. We thank you for your entry, and we will get this in the mail to you very soon.
Yes,
very soon. We'll throw some of the goodies in there with you.
Yes.
And thank you to everybody who entered the contest. We really appreciate that. It was a lot of fun to read all these suggestions.
It was. This was a great response. I mean, we're happy with all the suggestions we got. So.
Yeah. And surprisingly, we actually have a few other little goodies that we'll be able to give away in the future. So I think we're going to try and come up with some more contests.
Yeah. This was a good enough response to where, and we've got some pretty good goodies to give away.
We do. Yeah.
So,
better
than Kanzumi Goddess. Right. That's for sure. I mean, unless it's your type of game and then, you know.
Well, you know, hey, more power to you.
But, we've got some other games actually that we got a hold of.
Uh-huh. That we're going to be able to give away to our loyal listeners. And for any publishers out there, if you guys want to send us free copies of games, not for us to review because we're not about that, but we would love to give some stuff away to our listeners. Because
won't even crack the saran wrap.
Won't even break the seal. We would love to give more goodies away to our listeners because that we are all about that.
Yep, free advertisement for you and free stuff for our listeners. Right. So. Hey, if you're a publisher, actually, if you have a contest idea you think we could incorporate into the show and you want to send us a game, let us know. I mean, we'll talk. So
we'd love to.
We want to be able to give back to the fans. This is an easy way to do that.
Sure.
Robin, actually, we were laughing, you and I were, because we actually kind of have this backstock now of things to give away.
Like, holy cow, where did this come from?
How did that happen? Because we had talked the original contest we had. We wanted to have a contest, and we're like, well, we don't have anything to give away. And we gave away time on the show. You know,
right.
We let our first winner come on the show and pitch his game. And that was because that was what we had to give away. You know? So it's been cool to have other stuff.
It's been a lot of fun. So again, thank you everybody for entering the contest. We have a boatload of comments. Emails. I don't think we're going to read through them all on this show. We'll save some for next time. Real quick, I wanted to hit up a Twitter question that we got. This is from Andrew Fallows. He said, have you ever had a theme you wanted to make a game for that you couldn't find mechanics or a design to support it? Well, I'm still struggling with Death of a Salesman to try and make that. And so, I mean, I think it's a cool concept of death coming for somebody.
I think you're like halfway there with the mechanics too.
I don't know. It's just bothering me though. Toilet Wars, I still feel like never quite clicked. So I want to come back to that at some point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we got some positive responses on that one.
Yeah. Yeah, how about
that
you?
Part of it could just been the hype. You know, there's a game that I've been
the
working
hype over
on.
Toilet Wars.
Yeah. I actually don't remember if I pitched it on the show. But even if I did, I feel like the mechanics just aren't there. Like I have never prototyped it. But I want to. I had an idea for an island game where you were like settling these islands. And then you're trying to like get resources. And there's no fighting per se. Or was there? There might have been some fighting. I'm having trouble. Like,
sure.
So I went to these Apostle Islands and in Wisconsin and just fell in love with kind of the layout of the islands and was like, I want to make a board game with these islands. And it's been tough, you know? Yeah. I mean, and it's amazing because when something clicks, it just clicks, mm-hmm. you know? I mean, and you can just nail through, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. You know, and along those same lines, the Slender Man game that I was originally working on, that I still really think there's a lot of potential there in that game, but I just can't use Slender Man. And I just haven't been able to come up with my own unique character to use for it or an adjustment to the theme to really pursue it. And that's been, I'm struggling with that too. But, I just haven't really focused on it much lately.
Right. One more thing I'll throw out. I've always kind of wanted to design a survival game, like a survival Castaways game. And now there's like several Castaway games.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'd want to try and do something different, but I just haven't been able to think of something different enough to really click mechanically. So that's been, you know, that's been tough.
Okay.
So,
yeah. Also from Andrew here, he had sent me an email not too long ago, commenting on Troll Cakes. And I thought I would read a little bit of that here. He says, he was the first one to recommend the name Trollhouse Cookies to me. He said, my thought actually stemmed from the Knights. In the discussion between you and Jason on the show, I can't recall either of you talked about what could happen if, say, a player lacked the resources to respond to an attacking knight. When I finish a recipe, I might have an empty hand and no rocks, so I incur a penalty, right? And he's absolutely right. We didn't talk about that on the show, and that hadn't occurred to me before that show, and we as a result of Andrew's question and further discussions with us, that kind of led to some pretty significant adjustments to the structure of the game,
right?
We're running along here today, so I won't get into all that right now. I'll recap Troll Cakes in the next episode and kind of some of the changes that we've made to it.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
Yeah. So thank you for that, Andrew. Also, Gray, our big shot winner tonight, he had sent me a lot of comments about Maelstrom, and it's just so much that I can't even read it all. But he really liked a couple other things he said here. I got to say, I'm intrigued by the idea of the infinite draft. Every draft mechanic I've played starts the players with a set number of cards to draft in their hands. And after that number's gone, the draft is done. That the draft keeps going, and the idea that cards can go back from the hand to the draft is neat. So he really liked your infinite drafting concept that you would come up with. Let's see. And he says, and the idea of building a machine out of cards that modifies and enhances your gameplay, and neither of you made an engine building joke? You guys loosely made an engine building game about building an engine. Actually, the vibe I got was more like Flux with drafting, but the rules are individual instead of group, if I understood it right. And any game where cards build off each other needs to be evaluated to see if it's possible offset card system game. So he's saying that for our machine building game, it should be about putting together an engine using offset card system.
I could see that. Yeah. I could see how that could work for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a neat idea. What else you got?
You also got, and again, I've sent this to you. I'm not going to read it all because there's a lot, but Dan Masick also had sent some awesome ideas for Maelstrom.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, Maelstrom has been one of the ones where, man, we've got a lot of response on that.
A ton of response on
that.
That
game has just really clicked with people's minds, even not seeing it. So,
Yeah, well, so I should say, hey, Print and Play is ready to go. It's on the site. buildinggamepodcast.com. We have a games menu there. If you go in there, you can find a link to the Maelstrom page where I got a quick synopsis of the game, and you can click for a print and play of the copy for yourself to download and play at home.
Yep.
please do that. Please do that. I would love more blind playtesting. I really need more blind playtesting. The more, the better. So download your own copy of Maelstrom right on there. And I mean, while I'm talking about it, I might as well say there's also a print and play of Rocket Wreckers on there and a print and play of Potent Potions. Don't forget about that one.
Yep.
We would love any feedback that you guys have on those games. So take a look at them. Give them a try.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we really want to see you guys give them a try and let us know what you think.
Mm-hmm. A couple more comments here from the website. One is from our Grand Con game design panel. Again, from Gray. He says, thanks to this episode, I'm now the owner of a bucket of 1,000 cubes in 10 colors. Coincidentally, so am I.
And actually, so am I.
Yeah. As soon as we got home from Grand Con, we also immediately went on Amazon and bought our own tub of 1,000 cubes.
Yep. $19.99. You cannot beat that.
What a
especially
beautiful thing.
If you're going to send prototypes to publishers, they're basically just throwaway. I mean, because there's so many that it's never going to hurt to give some of those away. So,
yeah, it's so great. Last little bit here, we had a couple of comments also on episode 69 about interlopers and troll cakes. First from Dex. Dex says, the one thing you missed to solve two problems. Retheme Morels with cannibals. Somebody else had already commented on that, which was, I would be more excited about the game. He says, giants instead of trolls. Fee, fi, fo, fum. Misunderstood fairy tale creature that's not a troll. Giants.
It's actually a good suggestion.
Yeah, but the bugs would be so tiny to the giant.
Well, I don't think it'd be bugs, it'd be people.
Or like livestock, maybe.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Ooh.
It's kind of fun.
That's not bad. And then Zedward. That's funny. Zedward. Instead of Edward, it's Zedward.
It is.
He says, I want to play Ogre/Trollcakes right now. Well, I should probably do a print and play of that, too, then.
You should.
Yeah.
You know, at some point, we talked about not giving away print and plays until we got to certain love, but it is fun. How many likes do we have right there on Facebook? It says right there.
114.
You get us to 200, and we'll probably have already released a bunch more print plays.
Because we just can't stop ourselves. And that is all we've got, I think, for tonight, because we are way over on our time here. So thank you, everybody, for listening to Building the Game. We really appreciate it. If you want to get in touch with us again, send us an email to buildingthegamepodcast@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter @podcastbtg. Jason is @JASlingerland, and I am @poorly_designed. You can like us on Facebook. You can give us a 5-star review on iTunes. Don't forget about the BTG co-op. We've got more stuff coming up there every week. Some really exciting new stuff in the future. Remember to tune in to Something From Nothing, our bi-weekly video game designers hangout on Google Plus, where we will be spending some time with some other game design pals and talking about what designs are working on and kind of some of their approaches and philosophies to design. It's fun. If you enjoyed our roundtable conversations from Gen Con, we're trying to keep the energy and keep the fun of that going long term. You can watch it live every other Sunday night, or you can watch the archive shows on YouTube, link to them through the BTG co-op site.
Yep. Yeah, and those are a lot of fun. Hey, we'd also talk to, if there's anybody out there who is interested in the co-op, interested in being part of the co-op in a different sort of way, we could use some help doing some web stuff.
Yeah.
We're looking for somebody who knows a bit about PHP and about WordPress. And when I say a bit, I mean more than me.
Yeah.
Because I probably know a bit. So, yeah, we've got a kind of a special project we're interested in working on. We got some questions, and some of our listeners who we're pals with have been nice enough to give us some advice. But we need some people to actually help us do kind of some of the programming work.
Yeah.
So if you're interested, shoot us an email, buildingthegamepodcast.com. And we should talk about that.
Yeah, we would love to. So, yeah, get in touch. And that's all we got.
That's all we got.
Okay. So thanks again. Have a wonderful evening, a wonderful week, and we'll talk to you next time.
Good night.
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios.
All the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are the property of the Building the Game podcast.
Next time on Building the Game.
Talk, 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 talk.
Talk, 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 talk. Okay.
Talk, 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 talk.
Okay.
Talk,
talk, talk, talk, talk, talk, talk, talk. Okay.